But I don't know whether the team is here. Can you tell me? Are you?
Yeah.
We check as to where they are because we have got to continue now. We'll be getting the latest versions. However, we have the parliamentary legal unit here with us, and we had asked them to give us a legal opinion, particularly on the matter pertaining to the location of the PCI. I think we now can allow them to take us through on just to brief us on what they think is the case. And of course after that we'll then proceed to close by class adoption. I think we've reached a stage where we can actually do that. But if there will be some amendments that will be necessary, we'll allow members on the basis of what the legal opinion will get from the parliamentary unit. And let us appreciate the fact that they have done so as per our request. We will now hand over to them to take us through.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good evening to the Honourable Members of the Committee. We have been requested to look into the bill that is before the Committee to assess its compliance with the Constitutional Court's judgment in the Glenister matter. We had looked at the provisions of the bill as introduced and compared it to the bill that is currently before the committee. We do want upfront to record that the issues that we have identified in the bill as introduced, there has been a significant improvement on those issues in the bill that is before the committee currently reflects that improvement. Having said that, we have identified three issues that in our view still fall short of meeting the judgment, which in our view would render the bill, if passed in the current form, susceptible to successful constitutional challenge. Due to time constraints, I am not going to get into too much of the detail, except to raise those issues. One such matter relates to the issue of the reporting line of the head of the directorate. In our reading of both bills, the reporting lines of the head of the DPCI have not been clarified, which then leaves us with the impression that if that is the case, there is a danger in terms of 207 that the National Commissioner could claim that the head should report to him or her. And here we're talking about positions, not individuals. In our view, if the head of the DPCI were to report to the National Commissioner, it would compromise the structural independence of the DPCI. And in short, in order to avoid that, we recommend that the head should rather report directly to the Minister of Police. The reason for that is the judgment itself does not want off political accountability. What judgment is against is undue political interference, which the court has acknowledged the constitutional scheme in South Africa, that political heads do play a role when it comes to accountability. The second issue that we've identified relates to, I think it is Section 17, capital C, capital A, 15, which deals with the extension on retirement of the head of the directorate. So there's a provision that says if, for instance, the minister had appointed as the head of the DPCI somebody who is 56 years old, and in 4 years' time that person reaches the age of retirement, that then the minister is given the discretion to renew or extend that term of office. In our view, that could easily influence the incumbent in a view to secure the extension of his or her contract by the minister. And that, in our view, leaves the incumbent vulnerable to undue political pressures. In our view, this particular provision should be amended to basically take away the discretion for an extension. In that case, we are of the view that that will go a long way in addressing the security of tenure of the head of the DPCI. The last issue that we had identified is the issue of the inquiry that the head of the DPCI would be subjected to in the event of allegations of improper conduct. We welcome the provision that a judge would chair this inquiry. However, there are other possibilities and also the retired judge, in our view, we do not have a problem with the two. However, our challenge comes to the appointment of the person, the legal practitioner, so to speak. The court has pronounced itself on perception of independence. Now, if there is or there are allegations of misconduct against the incumbent head, one would expect a process that will have integrity, so that the outcome of that process will be accepted. Now, in our view, the option for the minister to appoint an advocate with 10 years experience, if the minister appoints that particular person, the challenge could be, is the minister not appointing someone to do his or her job in getting rid of this particular head, who might be doing an exceptional job, but is taken out for other reasons. There's nothing wrong in principle in having a senior counsel presiding, but what we would suggest is perhaps instead of the minister pinpointing an advocate that he or she would want to preside, that perhaps it should be the bar counsel, if it's the advocate or if it's an attorney that must preside, that the law society should be the one to provide the minister with a person to preside over that. In that manner, so that the integrity of the process is not tainted. But I will say, due to time constraints, those are the three issues that we have picked up. And I wouldn't want to waste your time. I can see that you have the entire bill to go through. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. It's quite assisting. We have these three issues. I don't know whether members will want to just make suggestions as to how we can deal with them. If there are any questions, maybe one thing that you've not said is the whole issue of location. That's also another issue, but probably let's leave it for members. You probably have to. Honorable Kola Banat, we also are making proposals, Honorable Judge, Honorable Annelies.
Chair, I would be very interested in some input, indeed, about the location. I'd be very interested to hear the opinion on that. And also, I have particular concerns about, well, there are like three pages of processes to go through to remove the person. However, there's just one line on the appointment of the person, and it's determined by one politician. And I wondered how that spoke to the Constitutional Court judgment about perception of independence, and also it doesn't come to Parliament. There are no parliamentary interviews. It is simply an appointment announced in Parliament. That to me, is deeply challenging in relation to the judgment by the Constitutional Court. So I'd be very interested in your input in that in particular. Thank you.
Madam Chair, first let's thank the parliamentary legal team for the input. I'm going to address myself on the three issues which they presented. The first one is the issue of the line, reporting line. I think we should welcome that. I think if this directly to the minister. Because even the Constitutional Court does not, like he said, does not rule out or political accountability, otherwise, unless it's completely outside. So I think the issue of reporting directly to the minister, we must accept it. The second one was the extension. You know, this morning I didn't speak when you people were talking about this thing, because I was wondering, why would the minister, knowing the 7 years, why would he appoint an old man who's just about to retire, or whoever was responsible? Because we can just make it very easy. If we say the 7 to 10 years, it's simple. Make sure that you don't appoint an old man of 58 years who's just about to retire 3 years. Tell him, sorry, you might have qualified, but your age. I mean, in defense, there are many posts in defense where age was important. If you're going to appoint a general, you check. Because once you become a general, you're on exit. So I'm saying, surely this appointment is going to come to Parliament. Parliament must not approve an appointment of a person who there's a hang up about the age. They must appoint either a person who either going to work for 7 years, so that to avoid this thing of extension. If you're appointed for 7 years, you're going to work for 7 years unless something unforeseen, ill health or something like that. So I'm saying, say for instance, if the retirement age is 60, then appointment must be made of a person who's 53, not a man who's 55, and then you go to sit with the problem. I think, surely, I was thinking, we are creating a problem which it might never even arise. Reasonable people will not appoint an old man for this. A reasonable man or a reasonable people will not appoint an old person. They put it that way. They will appoint a person of an age. So I think we must just I think leave that thing of extension. Make sure that the people are appointed at an age which, if for some reason, the person appointed is 55 years, at the age of 60, he or she must go. And that must be put in his contract beforehand, so that you don't have to have a legal wrangle. Commission of Inquiry. You see, we debated this question was a compromise legal practitioner. I think this is my advice. That let's go for a judge. A judge retired, because then we close the matter so that again it's. Because a retired judge is going to be appointed by the president, I assume, on a commission. So we close the matter of the minister. So, in actual fact, I accept in fact, number one to me is more important, because it deals with some of the concerns we had. If this person is going to be appointed, it's going to be appointed directly to the minister, I think it goes a long way in eliminating some of our concerns.
Thank you very much, Honourable Judge Eyre. I wish you put the issue of age in the bill. I will personally take you to the Constitutional Court for discriminating us on the basis of age, because that will amount to it.
With the Georgian age, females doesn't count anymore, so we can understand.
So I will do that, because that also would be discriminating some of us. No, I'm making an example. We once we're trying to tie up this
that the appointment does not go beyond unsafety. That there was never any constitutional challenge. In the defense, the appointment starts from 18 to 21. And yes,
but in actual fact, Honorable Judge, I was really joking.
Oh.
Yeah. I was not like saying let's have an argument on that. Members, I have pointed people on Honorable Ramatlakane.
No. Okay.
The quick ones. Well, I think in terms of the reporting line, the concern number one, I think we can easily agree to that. Because I think that we have had an issue about it, so I think we can tick a box on that. Now, on this issue of the Section 17CA, well, I think we had a discussion this morning about it, at length about it, because we were quite worried about it. Now, I am wondering whether the what the suggestion will be, whether the suggestion is that we should just simply take that out, or whether we shouldn't rather, if we take it out, this provision exists somewhere in the Public Service Act, and we rely on the Public Service Act when that happens, or if the need arises. So we take it out completely, knowing that there is other prescripts that addresses this particular issue, but here we become more clearer in terms of the time that we cut in this one. So I would think that maybe we should maybe gravitate towards agreeing on that, because it was a bit muddy. It was a bit, I must say that in discussing it, we were a bit not sure. On the inquiry, Honorable Chair, I think we had a long discussion here too, this morning in particular, around who should be who, and then we ended up accepting the Honorable George compromise position. Remember we said judge or retired judge. I think that's where we should have closed it. So if we can go back to that provision and we hear the legal opinion that says it's fine, I think we should really settle to that, because then it's more clearer. The last issue that I want to ask the legal person here is that the legal division, they did not mention that issue. They do mention 207 as a issue in terms of the Constitution. In fact, this is the issue that we kept harping on all the time, 207 in terms of the Constitution versus the power of the National Commissioner. You are not envisaging the same argument arising as in terms of the PMFA issue. In the bill there is something about if you're not envisaging that the same argument, you think there's enough safety valve that has been worked out in that provision. Let me remind you what the provision is on page 22 on the latest bill. My document doesn't have that page. I'm still waiting for that page. It talks about the ring fencing of the money. So it does not use the word ring fencing, but it uses the money that is appropriate for that purpose, exclusively for that purpose. You're not envisaging the fact that the accounting officer, in terms of the act, being a national commissioner, it may raise the very same issue that you raised in Section 207. Put differently, the PMFA gives the authority as accounting officer to one person in one department, which is in this case will be national commissioner. In the bill, we have tried to put the safety valves around how that budget is drafted and how we submit it. What I'm saying is that you don't envisage that it can raise the question the other way around. In other words, the way we started with the national director being responsible in drafting the budget, you're not envisaging the any comeback around the other way around, that we haven't taken the powers of the national commissioner in terms of the PMSA. That's the question I'm asking.
Listen, we have certain proposals that we would like to make that we believe would address the issues that have been raised. And I don't know whether you want me to make them now, Chair. You must guide me, please. Or whether we should make them when we get to the clause. Must we make them now? Okay, Chairperson, we've made copies. I'm going to ask as we go along that they give the copies, distribute the copies to the members of the proposals that we're making. The first proposal we're making is on page 11. Of the bill. And this issue, Chairperson, is addressing the issue of the 60 years issue. We do believe that we still have to make provision for the fact that the Public Service Act makes provision for that. But we want to clean it up that it's very clear in terms of how it reads then. The first proposal we make is on page 11, section 14, be deleted in its totality. So we delete, starting at subject to the subsection 12, the national head, deputy national head, and provincial head of the directorate shall vacate their offices on attaining the age of 60 years. That's the first proposal we're making. So you no longer vacate your post, your position at the age of 60. We then continue. I'm going to give them the next one as well. We then continue. If you can move to 16, but I'm going to read 15 so that we all now follow this argument. If the national head or deputy national head of the directorate attain the age of 60 years after the first day of any month, he or she shall be deemed to have attained that age on the first day of the next succeeding month. That's Public Service Act. Keep that in. 16, the next change. We say, the minister, we change may. We say, the minister shall, with the consent of the national head or deputy national head of the directorate, retain the national head or the deputy national head of the directorate, as may be applicable in his or office beyond the age of 60 years for such periods which shall not exceed the period determined in 17CA, which is a two-year period, because that's also Public Service Act. If it exceeds 2 years, except with the approval of Parliament granted by resolution. So in line with what the, what the Public Service Act says. So what we're saying is, Mr. George, you can still appoint somebody of 55 years. When that person attains the age of 60 years, he shall, he may no longer decide, he shall extend the contract. Not extend the contract, the person is still in the position because he's appointed for 7 or 10 years. So he shall do that. We're taking the discretion away from the minister. But we're still adhering to the Public Service Act. We can't ignore what is in the Public Service Act. And with the rest of it is as according to the Public Service Act. You can extend it by 2 years if it needs to be a further 1 year, you must come to Parliament for that purpose. So we've addressed that issue in that regard. Do I stop here, Chairperson, or do I continue? Continue. The next change is also on page 12 of your bill. And it's dealing with section 17. The national aid. Yeah, I'm starting to read at the top. The national head or deputy national head may only be retained as contemplated in subsection 16 if he or she wishes to continue to serve in such office and if the mental and physical health of the person concerned enables him or her so to continue. Then we remove, provided that the term of office of the national head or deputy national head of the director shall not exceed the term for which he or she has been appointed in the term for 16, 17CA, because the contract speaks for itself. We don't have to repeat it here. So we're just removing that. So Chairperson, the whole thing will now say if they become 60 years of age, the ministers show they seem to be still in office. We adhere to the Public Service Act. We say, I think it was Mr. Ramatlakhani who previously last week raised the issue, what if he doesn't want to continue? We're still making provision for that, according to the Public Service Act. This is the wording of the Public Service Act as well. And then all were removed because it was actually shouldn't, it's really not necessary for it to be here. The person is appointed for a fixed term. So we remove, provided that the term of office of the national head or deputy national head of the director shall not exceed the term of for which he or she is appointed in terms of section 17CA. That is addressed in the contract, so it doesn't have to be repeated here. That is a proposal around that one. Then, Chairperson, we move to We move to 23 on page 13. Page 13 of the new bill, we move to 23. Page 13, sorry, section 23. Everybody got that section and I can start. We now propose 13. I'm just waiting for the members to get it. The national head of the directorate shall not be involved in management functions of the service except as required in terms of Chapter 6A of this Act. And now we add the following words, and shall be accountable to the minister. So now it's clear. There's no reporting line to the commissioner. He's accountable to the minister. So Section 23, page 13. The national head of the directorate shall not be involved in the management functions of the service except as required in terms of Chapter 6A of this Act, and shall be accountable to the minister.
There's a proposal now on the table.
The next change that we propose, Chairperson, is on page 16 of the new bill. Page 16 of the new bill. Chairperson, here we make the following proposal. Under D Roman 2, must be led by a judge or retired judge. The minister shall make the appointment after consultation with the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development and the Chief Justice. So we remove, or a senior practicing advocate of the High Court of the Republic of South Africa, provided that in the case of the appointment of a judge or a retired judge. So we remove that section, and we just leave it to read. Must be led by a judge or retired judge. The minister shall make the appointment after consultation with the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development and the Chief Justice. So we take out the reference to the legal practitioner. Chairperson, those are the changes that we are suggesting to address the three issues that was raised. We do, however, also want to talk about the issue of the appointment of the head. Chairperson, Section 24 of the SAPS Act provides for the minister to make regulations. Those regulations include appointments, it includes procedures, etc., etc. What we what we want to make abundantly clear on this is that everything referring to, to Chapter 6 of the Tubbs Act comes to Parliament. The regulations concerning Chapter 6, with other words, this bill we are busy with, comes to Parliament. And that will then include the appointment procedures that the minister will embark on in appointing the person. So it will, minister will table the regulations, those regulations will speak to Chapter 6, and that will include all of these issues. Regulations will be tabled in Parliament for Parliament to, for Parliament to approve. So it's not only coming to Parliament for notification, it's coming to Parliament for approval. With other words, the minister can make a regulation. We don't know what's in the mind of the minister. The minister can, for instance, then regulate around the appointment. I intend to advertise the position. I intend to establish a panel to conduct the interviews. The panel will consist of 3 ministers, whatever the case may be. So the appointment process, Parliament will get the regulations and Parliament will have to approve those regulations around the appointment process. Jefferson, we believe that addresses some of the major concerns that people still had around this bill. We believe that it's going even further than what was expected of us to do. And I really believe, and I would plead, that if members are happy with the wording that we propose, that we accept those wording and that we try and move forward. I do believe we have adequately addressed all of these issues.
Any issue that members wanted to say? Or any, then we've come to Parliament Legal Unit. Honourable Samatlakane.
Just forget one thing. Sorry, Honourable Ramatlakane. Just one thing. Remember that according to the way that it's written now, if there should be changes in the regulations, it will have to come back to Parliament as well. So simple as that. So if there's a new minister and he decides now he's going to appoint his friend, that regulations need to come back to Parliament, and Parliament will have to agree to those regulations around the appointment.
Honourable Chair, just a quick one before I get into the last suggestions around the regulations. I just didn't get the proposal. Which provision, where are you inserting that particular phraseology in the Act? Because so far what we know is that normally the regulations are executive function. So if you could indicate to us so that we follow where they will be in the Act and precise wording of that, so that we know that it's going to be taking care of what it says. But otherwise, in principle, if the regulation were to come back to be known that this is the regulations that to come to Parliament, I think it will address the issue. But I just didn't get exactly where it's going to be in the Act. If I can maybe just get a clarity before we actually deal with the others, because others may just be straightforward.
Jefferson, it's in the Act. Sorry, Chief.
Can I allow the Parliament Legal Unit to maybe say something on the appointment?
Thank you, Chair. There's a question asked about the Constitutional Court's view on the appointment by the minister. The Constitutional Court in this judgment was clear that an appointment by the minister of an individual to an institution is not in itself illegal, not
it is not automatically an implication that the appointee will not act independently or impartially. Because that is what the court said. If I am just to quote it, the court said that there is a difference between being nominated by the executive to perform a duty which calls for an independent decision and being chosen by the executive to perform that duty in accordance with its wishes. Now, up until such stage that it is demonstrated, in other words, there's evidence that the minister is appointing someone that is going to perform the duties of the head of the DPCI in accordance with his or her wishes, that appointment cannot be forfeited merely because the minister is making the appointment. What is important is the checks and balances that are built into the appointment process. In other words, are there clearly defined criteria on who to be appointed into this position, so that if there is a deviation from the set criterion, that decision can be challenged. So, in our respectful view, there is nothing really untoward with the minister appointing the head. Thank you, sir.
The question on the regulations, can I answer that too? Mr. Ramathasa? Yeah, I know, I'm tired. Ramathakani? If you look at page 12 of the Act, section 18 reads as follows. Whenever the minister makes regulations or an amendment to such regulations, under section 24 of this Act, that's the Principal Act, and the Principal Act, section 24, makes provisions for DPCI specifically, which affects the directorate, the regulation shall be submitted to Parliament for approval. So it's not only when he makes the regulations, it's also when he changes the regulations. It must be submitted to Parliament for approval at least 1 month before promulgation. If Parliament is session, or if Parliament is not in session, within 1 month after the next ensuing sessions. The 19, and I think that's the important one, the regulations referred to in 17G shall be submitted to Parliament for approval. So approval is mentioned there twice. When he makes the regulations, when he changed the regulations. Section 24 of the Principal Act refers specifically to regulations around the DPCI. But we went one step further. We put it here in the bill to say, when you make regulations regarding this chapter, it must come to Parliament for approval. And it's in the Act already. We've already got it in the bill before us. So there's no changes there. We're just re-emphasizing the point that it is there and that the appointment procedure is also covered as a result of that.
Can I now take him? Honorable George, Honorable Kola Barnard, please remember that is the order. Honorable George, Honorable Kola Barnard, Honorable Ramathakane, and please let's deal with this issue such that we're moving towards, you know, finding solutions, then raising solutions. I mean, problems.
Yes. I've read the express. There's one of, and shall be accountable to the minister. I think we thank them for coming with that. But there's this one of extension. I don't have a problem with it, but I want to ask a question. There was a suggestion that you take it out because it's provided in any way in the PM Public Service Act. Why do you want to bring it here?
In fact, just say, I wanted to come into my apologies, if you can come in. You know, Professor Pierre DeVos raised an issue regarding bringing things through the back door. And in that case, he was referring to, I don't know, the ministerial committee and so on. My worry is that if we leave it like that, the PFA is actually giving whoever a discretion. The act itself, that's the worry. So we might actually be bringing the discretion through the act, through the section of the act, because the act is doing that. And in a way, once we want to accommodate the provisions of the act, but remember, I'm not a legal person, I'm an ordinary person, so the legal people will agree or disagree with me. If we leave it there, we through that door, might actually be bringing in the discretion again. And whoever might actually be saying there is still a discretion, because PSA is saying so and so. In fact, the Public Service Act is not giving it as a must that it must happen. So there is a discretion in the PSA Act itself. So I think it is important that we remove that discretion in this act once we take into account the provisions of PSA. I think that is what we are trying to do here, to remove that element of discretion which is provided in the Public Service Act, because it's not given that it's going to happen in the Public Service Act.
The last part, they must be led by a judge, and the retired judge, I agree. But why not with concurrence with the cabinet? You're taking now. You see now, if you say the minister, and in consultation with after consultation with the Minister of Justice, you're talking to two people. Whereas if you're taking to a full cabinet, it's a full cabinet, which normally deals with the issues of appointments and so on.
I think Mr. George, and I will forgive him because it's late, for me to read the whole thing. It's not only the minister and the Minister of Justice. It's also the Chief Justice. Because it can't be done without the Chief Justice's agreement on who that person is. Yeah.
You have every right to get to answer, I mean to ask questions and be clarified that you are satisfied. You are protected by the chairperson, not because you were in the church over the weekend, but because I'm protecting the members of the patrolling court. Honorable Ramatlakane.
Okay. I wonder if I could get a few other answers. We still haven't discussed the issues that we perhaps put to you earlier about your or we have to some extent. And I understand your direct interpretation on the placement, but I would like to read that in conjunction with the public perception element, which I don't think has been at all attended to in our deliberations, or very, very little of it. The National Police Commissioner is the de facto Chief Accounting Officer. Now, ring fencing or no ring fencing of a particular budget, this unit does not administer its own finances. So that, I believe, that was one of the very substantive issues raised by those who gave presentations during the public hearings. I'd like to know from you if you believe that the ministerial committee, about which were raised very large issues in the judgment, is it now sufficiently toothless to satisfy the judgment? Is there any reason at all it's even there? What is going to be the response of the Constitutional Court when they discover it is actually still included in the bill? Basically involves various politicians, certain politicians involved in the dealings of this unit. Again, the issue of public perception. One can't get away from the fact that the head of this unit is of a lower rank than the National Police Commissioner. And that while there has been this move to say, all right, and we will put the dotted line, well, put the direct reporting line to the minister, this person is still the head of a unit that falls under the National Police Commissioner in terms of the Constitution. Because in the Constitution, the Commissioner, National Police Commissioner, is in control of the SAPS and its dealings. So either we're saying, we're just going to say this is an exception to what is stated in the Constitution, and I don't know that we're actually allowed to do that. But either way, again, the public perception will be this is simply another unit of the SAPS and falls under the whole rank structure, and if the National Police Commissioner says jump, the head of this unit must say how high. That is the difficulty, and that is the public perception that I fear will still remain. The bill does give the head of this unit the power to ignore, basically, the National Police Commissioner and the provincial police commissioners. Should they argue this person now has the right to say, no, I win this argument. But again, is that not in direct contravention of both the SAPS Act and the Constitution? That a person who is the head of an organization may in this instance now, because of this bill, suddenly find himself subordinate to the head of one of the units within a division he oversees. Another possible problem. And the question has also been asked how it is seen that the minister, who is not a member of SAPS, could have or be suitably qualified to be the person to determine policy guidelines. It seems, and there have been suggested, that they should be drafted by the very unit we're talking about and then taken to the minister for concurrence. To leave those guidelines to be determined by a politician would again seem to fly in the face of the independence that the Constitutional Court has demanded. So a number of issues that I think are going to be fighting against them.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. I think firstly that section clause 7 on 14, I think we can agree. In fact, earlier on when we had a discussion, we had agreed to delete that. Because there was an issue about the vacated position, what it means. So I think that we can also cross the block and accepting that. And the new amendment around the shall instead of may, I think that too is a proper English, I think, is instructive. And so we can also cross that that box. Now, on the next one, the deletion on 17 Roman 2, you're suggesting we delete that because it's already addressed on 16. It's addressed on 16 A and B in terms of the, in terms, is it, I see you shaking your head. Okay.
Somebody is okay.
No. I was just asking the. But let me proceed because I was just not sure, but maybe you can explain that.
Somebody is stepping the chair.
It is called good manners. Yeah. Yeah. The deletion of that provided that the term of the office of the national or deputy shall not exceed the term that person is appointed for. The proposal is that we need to delete that section. Now, what's the caveat that you're putting in that place on that one? I didn't hear quite well the motivation that you're presenting.
Okay.
because and then I think maybe the clarity that will help me to on the next one on the 23, I think it's fine. I think we could accept that the accountability line. The last one is the issue about the retired judge. I think it goes back to the earlier discussion when we're still fresh. So I think we can easily accept that as well, that it's helping us to move forward in terms of the sticky issues. But if I may just get that clarity. No, I forgot. There are too many papers here. I didn't mean to do this. I know it's late in the day, so.
It's not late for me.
There's the point about the regulation, Honorable Chair, as page 12, 18. Except that there is a provision that is made here, but I think we should first start that sentence. I want to propose that we start the sentence. We delete the whenever. We then start the sentence with the minister shall make the. You listening to me, Chair? I'm on 18, on page 12. I'm saying I propose that we delete whenever. We start that sentence with the minister, and we insert the new wording, shall make regulations, and then you continue with that that paragraph as it stands.
Page 12, 18, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Thank you. At least I have the correct bill now because she gave me the. Okay, now I've got it. I don't know what to talk about. No. Thank you very much. It would seem like we are agreeing on the reporting line that it must be through the minister. If it seemed like coming to the inquiry, we seem to be saying yes, it must be a judge or a retired judge. Could you just tell me what in the reporting line would be straight to the minister? So the reporting on specific cases that are dealt with, I presume we're talking about, goes straight. Okay, obviously I'm wrong. What reporting are we talking about then? If I'm so wrong that the reporting on what they would do goes to the minister, the outcomes of their investigations, the reports of which would go to the minister, what protection do those reports have from political interference? One thing I like about this is when you read that we also accept that our legal system, requires some level of executive involvement in any area of executive functioning. That's the judgment. It says it. we do not travel with some measure of executive involvement. So I just want to say that, to say in South Africa, in our arrangement, and that's really, we are in another country, you cannot exclude completely the involvement of the executive members. And that is what even the judgment is saying. But the issue is, what is the level of this involvement? Is it to an extent that it can actually influence politically the actual functioning? I think that is it. Otherwise, in South Africa, you can't avoid it. There will always be an executive somebody. Unless, of course, we're talking about something else. But I think that is the situation. That is what the judgment is saying. I'm just referring all of us to that judgment. It's there. But let's continue. Honorable Ramatlakane, question just why we're deleting that section that says, provided that the term of office of the national head, of the deputy national head, does not exceed. I think that was the question.
If I may start to say, the proposed changes by the Honorable Ramatlakane on the wording, we accept those proposed changes where it deals with 18, so we don't have a problem with that. The minister shall make regulations. We don't have a problem with that. Then if we can go to his question, Chairperson, what we are doing, if you look at 16 talks about the minister, that the minister shall, with the consent of the national head or the deputy head, when they reach the age of 60 for such periods, we shall not exceed the period determined in section 17CA. Section 17CA is the contract. It's a 7 to 10 years. Section 16B, exceed 2 years except for the approval of Parliament granted by resolution. It's a PSA, it's a Public Service Act. So that's making provision. So we don't have to repeat what we've already said in 16. So all we do is we're just cleaning up, because it's actually in 16 already, referring to 7, if you look at 8. That one is basically just repeated there. So that is what we've done. But if I can also, we accept the proposal made by my Honourable Ramatlakane.
Thank you very much. The reason why I was actually talking to the state law advisor, I was asking the same question, because I've got a wrong bill. I had a wrong bill at the time, but now yes, I have the correct bill. I see what the Honourable Anil is saying. Yes. Member, yes? Okay.
Honourable Chair, that the short answer I was expecting from the Honourable was yes, because it's a repeating of it. So with that good explanation, a long explanation, I accept that we should accept that that the deletion of that particular provision. Thank you, Chair.
Politicians never give yes or no answers, that you can be sure of. Yes or no? He's not saying no, yes. He's saying accept me. Those are politicians, typical. Okay. Now let's move on. Members, we seem to have, I don't know whether the parliamentary legal unit will want to comment on anything. We want to move forward now.
Chair, I did ask quite a few questions. I wonder if they could answer.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and to the Honourable Member. There are quite a number of questions. I, in the process, try to summarize them. If I miss something, please alert me, Honourable Member. The issue of whether or not the bill addresses the issue of the finances of the DPCI, it is a matter that we had applied our mind to, because that is an area that you would ordinarily look at when assessing issues of independence. We're happy to report that we think that with the safeguards
that have been put in place, that there is a level of adequacy of independence. We say so because we also acknowledge the schematic things of things, in that there is an accounting officer. And we looked also at the National Prosecuting Authority. If you look at the National Prosecuting Authority, their budget is not with themselves. It is with the DG, Justice and Constitutional Development. So we did look at that, and we quite convinced that with the measures taken, that it does go a long way in addressing the issue of adequate independence. On the issue of public perception, perhaps I need to mention the issue that the court would not ordinarily listen to a member of the public making wild accusations. One needs to understand what is it that is being challenged. In other words, the member of the public would not convince the court merely that he or she is a member of the public. In other words, he or she would have to use evidence to justify the perception that he or she holds. In our view, then, that it is not just enough to say a public perception, that there needs to be a level of convincing as to why the cause for complaint. Then there was the issue of the minister determining policy.
Sorry, Chair, may I just ask, in relation exactly to that, in 12 submissions, substantive submissions, each one of them asked and gave reasons why they believed the unit should be placed elsewhere, for example, would they be considered to be sufficiently weighty to be of consideration by the Constitutional Court?
The issue of the location, if I were to come back to that, to me is settled to a large extent, because the court is clear that there's nothing wrong in locating this directorate under SAFS. In the same token, the court made it clear that it cannot be, its independence cannot be compromised. So to us, the issue of its location is a non-issue. A policy decision has been taken. In our view, that policy decision is not constitutionally incorrect. What we have looked at is whether or not placing it within SAFS compromises its independence. And say for the issues that we've raised, we are of the view that its independence is not compromised. I have unfortunately not had an opportunity, if I had read those, it must have been probably before the committee met to discuss the bill. But I'm sure some of the issues that they would have raised are issues that some of those who are probably addressed in the bill. That is before the committee now, not the bill as was introduced. Because you raised the issue of public perception, particularly in relation to the rank structure. The issue of position, in our view, is not a determining factor on the independence. What is important is, are there sufficient safeguards, checks and balances in place to ward off any attempt to unduly influence? It doesn't. I mean, even if you are a DG, even if the head of the directorate was to be made
a director general. That, in our view, would not in itself make him or her in a position just by virtue of the position he occupies. He immune from undue political interference. But what would make him or her withstand such undue political interference are the structures that have been put in place for him or her to withstand such pressures. The minister determining policy guidelines of, I think, section 206 of the constitution does give the minister powers to determine national policy. So we wouldn't see anything untoward with that function. I think my colleague, Ms. Sven Isaac, will speak to the issue of the ministerial committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the ministerial committee, this was a great cause of concern for the court. There were two issues that the court mentioned with regard to the ministerial committee. The first one was the untrammeled power of the ministerial committee to determine policy guidelines in respect of the functioning of the DPCI, as well as the selection of national priority offences. And the second one was that the in-built mechanism for to protect the DPCI was being undermined by the involvement of the ministerial committee. Now, with regard to the amendments affected to the amendment bill, the bill has removed much of the power of the ministerial committee. Now the committee may only determine procedures and coordinate the activities of the directorate and other relevant government departments or institutions. The committee no longer oversees the functioning of the DPCI and is not required to meet four times a year. The committee may now only meet as regularly as necessary and must report to Parliament on its activities as part of the director's annual report, and also has to report to Parliament when requested to do so. The operational committee is also no longer required to perform functions at the behest of the ministerial committee, and is no longer required to report to the ministerial committee. So this basically addressed all the challenges or all the issues that the Constitutional Court had with the Ministerial Committee, and it doesn't really have much power and is also much oversight on the part of Parliament. So I think it addresses the issues raised by the Constitutional Court.
Thank you very much, members. I want to believe that we are at a stage where we can now go cross by clauses, and that is what we want to embark on right away. We really have tried to deal with issues. In fact, I do want to believe that we all have the correct bill, and I just want really to thank the parliamentary legal unit for the issues that they have raised. We think that they are important, and I think that we have tried to tighten up anything that we have raised, and we think they are genuine issues. Thank you for that. Members, we are starting on page one. South African Police Service Amendment Bill, as proposed by the Portfolio Committee on Police, Minister of Police, D7 2012. We are adopting that. Thank you very much. We're moving on to page two. A bill to amend the South African Police Service Act, that portion, up to be it enacted by Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows. Amendment of Section 6 of Act 68 of 1995. We had actually requested the unit there to make some corrections. Have you done that? Can you check that? What was the correction so that we are reminded?
Chair, the correction is on the preamble where it says the directorate has the necessary structural and operational. So we had previously operational, we've now included structural.
Thank you very much. Do we... Okay. Are you agreeing? Okay, we are now on section 1 of
the deal. We will look into the whole section, section one, section one, 1-2. Yes. Agreed. Thank you very much. We're moving on to amendment of section 11 of Act 58, section 2. Agreed. Seconded. Thank you very much. We're moving on to page 4. Clause 3, A, B, C, D, H. Section. Honorable Reverend Mitchell.
Chairperson, I need clarity on 3, that speaks of 3H, AH, ne? Which a provincial commissioner requests the national head of the Directorate for Private Crime Investigation is referred to in section 1762 to prevent. May I be reminded about this prevention? What are we referring to?
Okay, if I may attempt to explain, the prevent we talk about here, SAFS has not only got an investigative mandate, they also got a preventative mandate, and that prevent refers to the preventative mandate. So where the DPCI can play a role to prevent crimes from happening, they should also to do that. And that's basically all it says. It's to prevent and investigate.
I'm requesting the team to indicate areas that they were to correct before we go, so that we ensure that they are corrected. Yes.
Okay, just then the corrections on page 4, it refers to both the national commissioner and the provincial commissioners, which was something you asked us to include in that section. Previously it was just the provincial commissioners, now we've included the national commissioner.
Thank you very much. That is section 3. We're moving on to section, on page 5, section 4. Section 4, the following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after section 78, applicability of this chapter. Yes. Up to that, agreed. We are on section of clause 5, agreed. If I'm fast, please tell me. Okay, we are on clause 6 now. The following section is hereby substituted to section 17C of the Principal Act, establishment and proposition here. Agreed. We are, this is section 6. 1, 2, 3, section 6. You are agreeing with it, okay? Section seven, 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. Can I go to the team first to check that you have inserted a correction?
Chair, we need to just check the Honourable Van Rijk made some amendments to the section which we got on paper here, which would change these sections. It would take out section 14, section 15, obviously we'll have to change the numbering, section section 15 becomes 14, and section, what's currently section 16, the word may would be changed to shall. And then on that section we also delete after Roman numeral 2, provided that in terms. And then on section 18, in terms of the amendments made by Honourable Member Ramatsakani, the minister shall make regulations, so we change whenever the minister. We've noted those changes. Yes.
We move for adoption of that with the changes.
Seconded. Thank you very much.
I'm not voting on this at this stage. I'm going back to my caucus. Thank you.
On this section or in the bill? On the bill. Okay. Okay. We are on section 8. A, B, C, D, E. Remember? Eight, A, B, C, D, E. Agreed. Thank you. We are on section 9. 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yes. That's section 7 A B. Are there any amendments?
Chair, there were some amendments suggested by the Honourable Member van Dijk, and I heard them supported by Honourable Member Matlakani regarding the, under this clause, the retired judge section, that we remove the legal practitioners. We have a record of what they have proposed under this amendment.
For adoption with the amendment.
My apologies, we're moving on to clause number 10, A, B, C, to be sure here, it's A, the number in there. Section 10.
Paragraph A to C of clause 10.
Okay, yeah, it's A to C of clause 10. But why, if I may ask, because maybe I'm not even saying. On page 18, why do we have A, and then C? And there is no B. Is that number incorrect, or to be sure? I can actually see A, B, C, the main A, B, C, but then under 10A, one would expect 10AB, but it says 10AC. Is it? Okay.
If I may, in paragraph C, we say by the addition of the following subsections, and then in subsection 9, that's got a paragraph A and a paragraph B, and a subsection 10, that's on page 20, and then just on the bottom there, subsection 11. So it follows under that heading of by the addition of the following subsection, so it falls within A, B, C.
The numbering is correct. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure whether that's correct. I will not look at page 18. Because page 18, you have 10A, then AC. There's no B.
Mm-hmm.
page 18, if you read it, there's no, it's just a continuation of the same paragraph. It's just seen, just needs to be taken out there.
The, by the addition of the following subsections will be in the after the section subsection 8. The act, the section stops there, so we are adding subsections 9, 10, and 11. That's why we've got a paragraph saying we're adding to the existing section in the principal act. It's not there, so we're adding this in terms of this book. That's why it's like that.
It's an addition. That is why the numbering here would look like there is something wrong, but it's an addition on the existing. There is no C in the principal. Yes. So we're adding C, and that is why it is C here. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Are you agreeing? Section 10. I really want your attention here. We are agreeing. Okay. We are on section 11, A, B, C, D. Section 11. Yes.
There was an important amendment made here, which we were asked to go away and look at, and that is on page 21. Under C, 6A, the head of Crime Intelligence Division of the Service shall, upon request of the national head of the directorate, make available crime intelligence capacity to assist the directorate in specific investigations. That's how it's now worded, Chair. Page 21, towards the bottom, under C6A. That's the new wording that we came up with when we were asked to look at that.
The head of Crime Intelligence Division of the Service shall, upon a request of the National Head of the Directorate, make available crime intelligence capacity to assist the Directorate in a specific investigation. That's the wording. Thank you very much. Are you in agreement with Section 11? Thank you very much. We're moving on to Section 12. Section 12, 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6. Members, any amendment? Secretary, anything there?
Sure, we didn't change anything, but I think there's been a lot of interest on the ring fence, and that arises on section 24, 5 A and B, and 6 are the relevant section on page 24 of that section.
Section 12. Okay. Thank you. We are agreeing. We're moving on to section 13. You know, in the olden days, the lawyers were referring to clauses. Now it's sections. I don't know what changed. The clause and the section is one and the same thing. It's not the same thing. Oh, okay. Section 13. Oh, it's the smaller
than a clause in a bill and sections in an act, Chair.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. I've learned. Thank you very much. Section 13. A, B. Member? Yara Gray. Thank you very much. We are on section 14, page 25. I like the clause. It's still in section now, I'm told. We are section 15. It's a clause, yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Clause 14. They didn't tell me. Clause 14. Clause 14, A, B, C, D, E. Agreed. Clause 15,
Any amendments? Nothing? Nothing? Okay. Agreed. Clause 16, A, B, C, A, B, C. Agreed. Thank you. Page 17, clause 17. Agreed. Clause 18. Agreed. Okay. Clause 19. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Agreed. Clause 20. AB. Clause 20, AB. Agreed. Clause 21. And clause 22. We're going to schedule. This schedule 1, 2, all of them. All schedule. Agreed. Thank you. We're going to the memorandum on the objects of the South African Police Service Amendment Bill. Background objects of the bill. Just want to be sure that you have updated them. Okay. This clause 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, should I go to 11, 12, up to clause 22.
It was a technical amendment that related to the amendments that have been made in the Act, and that was it.
So we are agreeing with the memorandum on the objects, departments, police, financial implications for the state parliamentary procedure. Are we agreeing with that 345 on page 41? Okay. Members, here is the bill. The whole bill, are we in agreement that this is our bill? Then we will want a person moving for the adoption of the bill. Honorable Angie.
Thank you, Chair. From the ANC, I'd like to move for the adoption of this bill, Chair. Thanks.
Any seconder? Honorable Ndlovu.
I'm being harassed by my neighbor here, but because I trust you, you'll protect me. I want to second the proposal with the amendments that the Reverend has done. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Hey, just to call my attention. Thank you very much, Honorable Kola Banat. Are you abstaining as Honorable Kola Banat, or the A is abstaining as a party or as an individual member? Do you think we need that to assess?
I represent the DA here. I'm abstaining until I can have further discussions with my colleagues. So I'm abstaining for now. I'll make my own decision later. Thank you.
Okay. what you're saying, we need to record that. So you're saying that the DA is abstaining. Thank you very much. Members, can I therefore read the report of the Portfolio Committee? A report of the Portfolio Committee on Police, on South African Police Amendment Bill. I think the ANC is disordered.
We just made a phone call to Kusato.
Report of the Portfolio Committee on Police, on South African Police Amendment Bill, B7-2010, National Assembly Section 75, dated 16 May 2012. The Portfolio Committee on Police, having considered the subject of the B7-2012 National Assembly Section 75, referred to it and classified by the Joint Taking Mechanism as Section 75 Bill, present a redraft of the bill B7B 2012. That will be our report. Members, I want to take this opportunity to appreciate the work that we have done. We have indeed processed quite a number of bills with this Portfolio Committee, but I think this is one other difficult bill that we have had to process. We've proven beyond any reasonable doubt that this is our work as members of Parliament, and we know best how to do it. I want to believe that we have come up with a bill that will stand the test of time. Personally, I'm not afraid of anyone taking it to the Constitutional Court. As a matter of fact, if that happens, probably it will assist us to once and for all have an act that has been tested by in the Constitutional Court. I want to thank you all really for the sacrifice that you have made. I want to thank the team from the department, from the secretariat, from our state law advisor's office, but of course our parliamentary unit. I want to thank you really for the hard work and your preparedness to work overtime to ensure that you meet our demands. I want to thank the members of the Portfolio Committee, all of us. I do believe that all of us have made some contributions in this bill. Even Honorable Kola Banatu is abstaining for now, but I think she questions that she asked assisted us in a way. I want to thank our support staff, all of them. I want to thank members of the media. I want to thank our researchers for your hard work. I want to also appreciate the spirit at which we processed this bill. There was a high potential that we could be very emotional on some issues and end up, you know, fighting amongst ourselves. I think we treated our disagreements with maturity and a sense of knowing that we are honorable members. And in that regard, I want to thank you very much and want to thank you for the respect you always accord to this person. Sometimes I even wonder whether I am worth that respect. I just want to appreciate everything. If it goes according to plan, this bill will be debated in the House on the 23rd. I am appreciative of this month. I really am appreciating everything that we have done. When you hear the legal people saying what you have now is not what you had then, it didn't happen on its own. It's because we did everything possible to ensure that we have a bill that indeed takes into cognizance the judgment. You know, for once I realized that good as it is our responsibility to make law,
And I believe that judges do not need to, but they do. As a matter of fact, when they judge on the net, that judgment becomes law in a way. So we now are bound by a judgment because you can't escape the judgment. So in a way, it is a law. And I just want to appreciate the fact that we are here. I think we've learned a lot during this process. You know, good as we will know to Section 207 of the Constitution, but I think during this process and engagement, we have become more clearer in understanding some of the sections of the Constitution in relation to the South African Police Service. And therefore, good as this was an exercise to come up with this bill, however, it also was a learning exercise for all of us. And I just want to appreciate that. Thank you very much. General, please appreciate, extend our appreciation to the Acting National Commissioner for allowing everybody to be here. We really are appreciating everything that has happened here. Members, I do believe that I wanted to close, and then Honorable Ndlovu and Honorable Ramatlakane, as usual, the Honorable Ramatlakane.
Thank you very much, Chair. I know it's late in the day, and I have.
As usual, what? I wanted to know as usual.
And I know that I have been troubling you when you close a subject, and I had my hand up. But I just want to, I'm raising my hand at this time to be positive. Where we started and where we ended. And to just thank you, as the Chair, on behalf of members here, that I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of everybody, that I think the environment that you have created for engagement across here somehow has been a conducive one that made all of us really to move forward in terms of there hasn't been any kind of a chair that is chairing unbalanced. The chairing has been fairly fair that we want, and in my view, it's really chairing to make sure that we get the best bill out of everyone. As the person coming from the opposition, I think I felt that I was having a equal participation than everyone in the bid, except that the slight jabs that we got. But I think that we want to thank you on behalf of the members here. That I think that it has been a learning, but also good and robust, but fair in terms of it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you for that. Members, this meeting.